All right, the recorder is on. And in NTI, on the Kindle, I'm on page 159. We're looking at Luke 15, verses 11 to 24. Does anybody know what page it's on in the paper book? 160. You guys are a page ahead of me. Probably near the top, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're only like half a page ahead of me. I'm at the bottom of 159. Okay, so the top of page 160, and I'll begin reading. Now, this is the story of the prodigal son, or the lost son. Does everybody know that story, or should I tell it first? Is everybody familiar with it? Okay, good. It's probably one of the most popular stories in the Bible. All right. Let's look at the parable of the lost son, which seems to be a story of separate and independent beings, but cannot be, since there are no separate or independent beings in truth. The Father within the story is the same as me. There is no difference between us. You are the one who seems to be the lost son. However, you cannot be lost in truth, since you are one with me. The journey that this son seems to have taken is a journey in the mind only. In other words, you have traveled away from me in the perception of yourself. But this journey has occurred in perception only. We are not separate in any way. Now you are becoming ready to wake up from this imagined journey that you have taken. I have come to meet you and help you return to the truth of yourself. Here are some thoughts I ask you to practice giving acceptance to. The Spirit of God is one. Nothing exists that is outside of the Spirit of God. I exist, and so I must be within the Spirit of God. That which is within the Spirit of God is the Spirit of God. I and the Spirit of God are one. All else is illusion. As we move forward, I will help you to see and understand these thoughts more clearly. For now, I ask that you give willingness to accept them. I also ask that you remember whatever is true for you is true of everyone and everything you experience. So in effect, we have an assignment there. And the assignment is to practice giving acceptance to these thoughts. And the I in this, like when it says, I exist, and so I must be within the Spirit of God, that is you. You're speaking about yourself. I exist. So obviously what Spirit is going after here is that belief that, again, we are separate and independent. And Spirit is trying to help us to open up to a mindset first, open up to a mindset that we are not separate from God. At least that. The truth is there are a lot of different pathways to realizing oneness. And it's kind of funny if you look at the different pathways, because sometimes they seem to be moving in opposite directions, but yet they end up in the same place. But what this pathway is doing is right now, it realizes that you see many separate things. You see me, and then, of course, Danielle and Ruby and Dave, you know, all the way around the room. And then there's furniture and chairs and building. And then there's God. And, like, everything is separate. So what it's doing is it's trying, the path that this has taken is it's trying to get you to at least realize that you're one with God. It's not worried yet about, you know, you being one with your brother yet or one with the chair yet. It wants you to at least realize you're one with God. Because for some minds, and you know, this, of course, most specifically was written for me, but for some minds, that's going to be the easiest approach, actually, to see that I am one with God. And once you see I am one with God, then that can expand to include other things, right? The first is seeing that I'm one with God. So that's what we're going after. But what he's also asking us to remember in this last paragraph is that if that's true for me, then that has to be true of everyone and everything. So he's already showing that that's going to expand out beyond just I am one with God to I am one with everything. But this is our starting point. And again, since guidance is such an important part of NTI, learning to follow guidance, This also gives you an experience of being one with the Holy Spirit, which is just an extension of God. Because as you learn to follow guidance more and more, again, the coincidences that show up, you can't help but notice that you're not independent. Like, you just can't help but notice it, you know. So it becomes very experiential that you are one with the Holy Spirit. And then that helps you to accept that you're one with God, and then from that expand out into you're one with everything. But what I would recommend, if you're really interested in this, is that when you get home, you go ahead and maybe write these italicized sentences on a piece of paper, a small piece of paper, and then maybe just carry them with you between now and the next class. And every time you think of it, just take them out and read these sentences along with willingness, along with an openness, along with an open heart. You know, the Spirit of God is one. Nothing exists that is outside of the Spirit of God. I exist, and so I must be within the Spirit of God. That which is within the Spirit of God is the Spirit of God. I and the Spirit of God are one. All else is illusion. And actually, the language I'm just noticing is actually pretty gentle, because probably I would have had a lot of resistance at the point when I received this to say I and God are one. So notice it's softening a little bit by saying Spirit of God, right? I and the Spirit of God are one. So it's a pretty gentle opening. And the way this is similar to the story of the prodigal son is that, remember, when the prodigal son decided to come back home, the father ran out to meet him, right? And so that's what Holy Spirit is saying that it is doing. It is, we have decided to go back home, and now he is running out to meet us and greet us and take us all the way back. Now, you remember there was the other son in the story, the son that was jealous of how much attention and welcome the prodigal son got. This says, the other son within the story represents resistance within your mind. It serves no purpose but to deny that you and the Father are one. Do not look to the resistance in this story. Stay with your willingness. Stay with your joy. And whenever NTI says do not look at the resistance, it's not talking about denial. What it really means is don't get caught up in its stories. Don't get caught up in its thoughts. You know, basically the way that would work for me is if I have some thoughts of resistance coming up, I do look at them, but I say, that's just resistance. That's not what I want to listen to. And then I turn my attention to my willingness. So it's not, he's not saying don't deny them. He's just saying don't spend all your time there. You know, spend your time instead with your willingness. All right, so let's go on to NTI Luke chapter 16. There are many questions that will come into your mind as you follow this path with me. You will often wonder what is right to do and what is wrong to do. And you will feel confusion and worry within your mind. Let me remind you that confusion and worry are not of me. They are resistance. So you may rejoice that you do not need to listen to them. When confusion and worry are upon you, simply rest and let them pass. When you are feeling peaceful and joyous again, do whatever comes into your mind for you to do. We've talked a little bit about this before, but when people start learning to follow guidance or learning to follow intuition instead of thinking, I don't know if it's our culture or if it's just our nature, but for some reason, many of us also have this belief that if we can discover and follow our guidance, we're doing the right thing. And if we can't discover or if we choose not to follow our guidance, we're doing the wrong thing. So it's like this good or bad thing going on. And when we have this belief that following guidance is good and not following guidance is bad, then what automatically comes with it is fear. Fear of, am I right that this is guidance? You're everybody shaking their head. You guys know what I'm talking about. So that's what Spirit is addressing here. And Spirit's going to address that in two ways. But the first way Spirit is addressing it is saying that whenever you are feeling confusion about guidance, You're not listening to spirit in that moment. So that's where you start with your now. Right now I'm confused. I can't possibly be listening to spirit right now because there wouldn't be confusion. So these confusing thoughts that I'm listening to, they have to be ego, because there's only two things, right? Spirit or ego. So the thoughts themselves that are saying, I don't know guidance. Oops. I think it's cool how phones are starting to sound like phones again.
Yeah,
it does. The thoughts themselves that are saying, I can't hear guidance. The thoughts themselves that are saying, I don't know what to do. These thoughts themselves are ego. So spirit is saying, when you feel this confusion, rest your mind right then. And do you guys know what rest your mind means?
Remind us.
Well, for me, the way rest my mind used to work, in the beginning stages, was I would start with breathing. I would notice my mind is all wrapped up with confusion, so I go, okay, this is just confusion. I mean, it's breathing and self-talk. This is just confusion. This can't possibly be of spirit. I do not need to listen to these thoughts. These thoughts are ego. I don't have to believe them. And I would just breathe and talk, and kind of talk myself away from listening to them. And that's resting the mind. Resting the mind is basically unwinding. Well, when you're caught up in those thoughts, you're kind of wound up, right? So it's an unwinding process. And breathing and self-talk are what I used. So that's what spirit is saying. When you feel confused about guidance or worried about guidance or what you're going to do, you're already caught up in ego, so go ahead and start resting from that. You don't need to continue to listen to those thoughts. And then, again, part of the problem, the reason you got into that state of confusion or worry in the first place, was because you believed in right or wrong, right? If I find guidance, I'm right. If I don't find guidance, I'm wrong. So starting at sentence 8, spirit says, let me address the concepts of right and wrong now, for these concepts lead to confusion. Do you not notice that right and wrong are judgments? Have I not asked you to lay aside judgment? Do not worry that you will be wrong in something that you do. Remember, I have told you that you will only have two experiences on this path, willingness and resistance. Choose with willingness and you will feel joyful and all things will be helpful. Choose with resistance and you have only chosen delay. So what does that look like? Let's say that I have in front of me two jobs and I can take one job or the other. And I'm trying to follow guidance in finding out which job to take. And, you know, because I also really have a lot of other stories. Guidance would be easy if I didn't also have a lot of other stories. It would always be easy. What blocks it is all the other stories. So I have all the other stories about, you know, I liked this boss better than this boss, but this one made more money. And, you know, this one was a better commute, but this one I had a larger office. And I have all this stuff going on in my head, and I'm trying to hear guidance too, so I can't. But basically what spirit is saying is, don't worry that you're going to make a wrong decision. Okay? Do not worry about that. If you really do not feel that you know your guidance, just make a decision and give that decision to spirit. That's choosing with your willingness. Say, okay, spirit, I'm not sure of what my guidance is here. It's too much going on. I can't feel it, but I'm going to take this job. And now what I want to do is I want to give this to you and ask you to guide me here. So always choose with your willingness. Keep your purpose in mind in everything, and spirit says you're going to be fine. And what ends up happening, of course, as you do that, as you go further and further along, your trust does naturally develop, your willingness does grow stronger, and the stories start to become less important, and eventually you do know your guidance more clearly. But spirit doesn't want you to be worried about right or wrong. Spirit wants you to at least just make the best choice you can and say, okay, spirit, I give this to you. Like GPS, right? If you make a wrong turn, the GPS goes with you anyway and directs from there, right? So spirit does the same thing. Spirit goes with you anyway and directs from there. So just always stay with your purpose as you're making your decisions. Spirit continues, it is true that you cannot serve two masters. In fact, you can only serve one. In your willingness, you serve truth. And because only the truth is true, that can be the only master. In resistance, you serve nothing. For anything that is not true is illusion. Remember that you are never focused on the world and you will not be confused. Always, in everything you seem to do, you are choosing among thoughts within your mind. Always, in every choice, you choose between willingness and resistance, joy and delay. Keep these simple thoughts in your mind, and you will not know confusion. Keep these options clear within your mind, and you will always know your guidance. Choose to follow guidance, and you choose health, happiness, and the path of truth. So again, when he's saying, remember, you're choosing either willingness or resistance in every moment, he's really focusing you back on the moment. If you remember that something as simple as worrying about your guidance is resistance, and you always want to choose with willingness, then when you find yourself worrying about your guidance, you'll go, oh, wait a minute, this is resistance. I want to choose willingness. I put that aside, and I decide to trust whatever decision I make. Right? So you're always choosing with your willingness. And if you get in the habit of that, of putting aside your worry, your fear, your guilt, and just start trusting everything, knowing that Spirit goes with you no matter where you go, right? You are going to find yourself pretty soon just being more peaceful and joyous. That one decision is going to change everything, choosing to always be in willingness, to always be in trust. You can see how willingness and trust are going to keep you in peace and joy, where fear and worry and judgment are going to keep you out. It doesn't even have anything to do with which job you took, right? It has everything to do with what's going on up here about your decision. You know, if you make a decision and then you tell yourself over and over, oh, I know that was the wrong decision, I know I should have chose this, well, then everything, because every job has problems, right? But you might start to perceive every problem as a punishment now because you took the wrong job. Right? When there were going to be problems in that other job too. You know, your mind is going to start interpreting in a painful way if you stay stuck on, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I never follow guidance. It's going to color your whole experience. But if you can stay on, I trust my decisions, I trust Spirit is always with me, I trust everything is for my healing, right? I trust I can only be on the right path. You're going to experience everything differently. So it's funny, we get all caught up in what am I to do, when actually how am I to do it, or what is the attitude I'm to have while I do it, is actually more important. All right, let's go ahead then. Verses 16 to 18. The law upon which you make judgments is written within your mind. And in this law, you have placed your faith until now. He's going to tell us what that law is in a moment. Now you are awakening to a new way to perceive, but you feel guilty, because your perception still seems to cling to the old ways of judgment. Let me tell you that of yourself, you cannot stop judging by the law that has been believed within your mind. That is because you chose to believe this law, and so the law is your desire. In order to have the law erased from your mind, you must give your willingness that it be erased. When you notice that you are making a judgment based on the law, you must rest within the mind and give your willingness again. Do not believe your own judgments, for that keeps you stuck within the law. Now again, he's going to tell us what this law is in a moment. But before we go to that, what he's really giving here is what I would call very practical advice. He's not saying, make sure no judgments enter your mind. Because to be honest, that's impossible. You can't do that. So he's not saying that. He's saying when the judgments come into your mind, give your willingness not to believe them. Right? So if a judgment comes into my mind about, you know, anything, about the color of this carpet, right? I think, oh, this is such a dingy carpet. It would be so much better if they did something else in here. Give my willingness not to believe that thought. And it's funny because even a thought like that, I mean, if I think, oh, this is a dingy carpet and I believe it, then pretty soon every time I walk in here, I'm in a dingy building that's going to affect me, right? I'm in a dingy building, but maybe Dan's not. Dan's in a beautiful sanctuary, you know? You know, we're sitting in the same room, right? So our judgments really hurt us way more than we realize. And so we can never be at peace, we can never be happy, we can never be joyous in a consistent way without interruption as long as we still believe our judgments. And at the same time, we can't stop the judgments from showing up in our head. We just can't make it happen. If you try and do that, you're going to kill yourself. You're going to beat your head against a wall. So instead, the judgments show up. We may even have a moment of believing them, a moment of feeling like I'm in a dingy place, right? And then I remember, wait a minute, it's my judgment that's hurting me. I give my willingness not to believe this judgment. And of course, that goes for your environment, your spouse, your children, your parents, yourself, right? Just everything. And the more you can give willingness not to believe your judgments, in my experience over time, although I understand it can happen miraculously, but in my experience over time, pretty soon the judgments show up, but without the belief. Like you don't even have to give your willingness not to believe them because you just don't, right? You just don't. And so they have no power anymore. They don't affect you anymore. And then also in my experience, what happens after that is eventually they also quit showing up so much because they're really in kind of a recycle. Like when you believe it, it comes back. When you believe it, it comes back. And when you stop believing, and then that slows the recycle. So pretty soon where there were thousands of judgments in your mind a day, now literally there may be 20. That's a big difference. You know, it's a big difference. And then you still do the same thing with those 20, right? You give your willingness not to believe them. That never stops until there are no judgments. All right, so if we go on with sentence 10, where again, we were talking about this law on which we base our judgments. What is the law on which your judgments and old perceptions are based? It is the law of separateness. It is the law that says the Spirit of God is not one. Or it may allow a belief that the Spirit of God is one, but it perceives that Spirit as separate from you and others. And since the law is separateness, it must also see differences that uphold the law. Judgment is the servant of this law. For judgment makes the law master and confirms the law within the mind. Belief and acceptance of this law gives judgment purpose, and judgment gives the law reality. Without judgment, the law cannot stand. Without the law, there are no differences on which to judge. So really what he's telling us here is that judgment and the belief of separation are inseparable. You know, they're inseparable. And if you can let go of either one, the other one goes too. If you're able to let go of the belief in separateness, judgment dies. If you're able to let go of judgment, the belief in separation dies. And again, the path that was given to me is the path of letting go of the judgment by starting with your willingness. By noticing the judgment and being willing not to believe it. So it's the path of letting go of the judgment, and when the judgment goes, then the separation has to go too, because they work together in order to create that perception. So the next paragraph is, give your willingness not to judge, and rest the mind when the temptation is upon you. When you do this, you give willingness not to serve the law of separateness, which is also to give willingness to know the Spirit of God is one. So again, this is all, you know, one thing that I like about NTI and that I've heard that other people like about NTI is that it's practical. You know, it kind of gives you simple stuff that you can do if you want to, right? I mean, we can all, maybe, again, none of us can stop the judgments from showing up in our mind. But if we want to, when the judgment does show up in our mind, we can say, you know what, I give my willingness not to believe it. That doesn't even mean make yourself not believe it now. You might not be able to make yourself not believe it now, right? But you can give your willingness not to believe it. And again, my experience is that consistent practice of simple steps like that somehow adds up, and I don't know how, that's like a behind-the-scenes thing, but it somehow adds up where the belief in the judgments does die, and then the judgments themselves begin to die. And then there's just all this happiness and joy, and the whole way you see begins to change. I mean, my experience is this works, I guess is what I'm saying. It absolutely works. But I will tell you that I was a fairly consistent practicer. I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect practicer. You know, that doesn't exist. But fairly consistent. So as a practicer of NTI, I really wasn't the type of person that read the book, closed the book, walked away, and forgot what I read. I really wasn't that type. And I think that makes a lot of difference. I read the book. Actually, I received the book, but that was like reading it for me. I read the book, and then I walked off and I practiced it. And in fact, when I received NTI, I received it at about the rate of a page and a half a day. And during the day that I received that page and a half, I read that page and a half multiple times. Multiple times, and was practicing it and practicing it. And so I feel like NTI for me was kind of like a staircase. You know, I kept going higher and higher and higher into seeing, but the reason for that was because I didn't just receive it and then, you know, go back to my normal life. You know? I received it, I read it over and over again, I practiced it to the best of my ability, and that's what made the difference. So and to this day, I'm still that way. You know, now I'm practicing something different. I'm practicing the seven steps. But, you know, I don't just read the book and walk away. I don't know how, you know, that's very important. And what I find with the vast majority of spiritual students is that that's what they do. They read the book. They say, oh, this is really cool. I mean, you know, they feel it when they're reading it, right? But then they put it down and they go right back to whatever they did before, you know, to their regular state of mind. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is these are simple steps, and we can all do it. So the just question is just, you know, do you really want to? And even if you only do it twice a day, like that's, say, that's where you start, twice a day you remember to do it, do you realize that's better than before? I mean, you know, that is practicing to your best at that point, twice a day. And if you practice, if you remember twice a day, pretty soon you're going to remember four times a day, and then you're going to remember six times a day. So when I say do your best, I don't mean on the first day you should remember 100 times. It's probably not going to happen unless, you know, you're pretty dang amazing. It didn't happen that way for me. And I was reading it the same pages several times. But it kind of starts at like a slow dribble, a slow drop, you know, drop. Occasionally you'll see a judgment and remember. But then it increases with practice, just like anything else, right? All right, the next part I really do need to read to you from the Bible, because this entire next section won't make sense if I don't. So what I'm going to do, fortunately I'm on a Kindle here, so I can just leave NTI and go to a Bible. Look, I have the story of Little Black Sambo. You know, it was outlawed for a lot of years. Did you know that, Little Black Sambo? And it's back now. And it was my favorite story when I was a little kid. So I went and got it. So it was fun reading it again. I haven't read it since I was like four. It's a great story. All right. So I want to go to the Holy Bible. And let's see. I'm not the best yet at the Kindle as far as moving around. Let's see. We are in Luke. Let me see if I can at least find Luke. Whoops, that says like. Luke 16. Okay, take me there. Okay, take me there. Can you do that? No, you can't do that. You should be able to do that. Take me there. Aha, very good. Luke 16. Okay, here we go. It's called the parable of the shrewd manager. No, that's not it. Oh, here we go. The rich man, Lazarus. Here we go. All right. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores and longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died, and he was buried. In Hades, where he, the rich man, was in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. So he called to him, "Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, because I am in agony in this fire." But Abraham replied, "Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, while Lazarus received bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. And besides all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been set in place, so those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us." He answered, "Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them, so that they will not also come to this place of torment." Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them." "No, Father Abraham," he said, "but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." He said to him, "If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." And that's the end of the story. What do you think of that story? Were there any thoughts at all in your mind as I read the story, or after, as it ended?
Sense of separation and the chasm.
And yeah.
The good and the bad and the judgment and all that stuff.
It's, I didn't know the Bible was written like that. I'm not familiar at all with Christian, Christian scripture.
Well, I'll tell you what happened to me when I read the story, because it's probably important, because it probably affects what we're going to read next, since I'm the mind of the scribe. What happened to me is when I was first reading the story about how Lazarus was suffering in life and the rich man would not help him, there was a judgment in my mind against the rich man. You know, he could at least throw him some bread, right, out of the wagon. Then when they died, and the rich man went to hell and Lazarus went to heaven, I don't think I really had a big thought about that. Probably more of a judgment of, I don't like the idea of hell. I wish there wasn't a story about hell in the Bible. That was probably my judgment, which is a judgment. Same one you made, right? Maybe. And then when Lazarus started asking for pity, and Abraham, who's really speaking for God, would not give it, as it went on and on and on, and he wouldn't even send Lazarus to warn his brothers, I started judging God. I started thinking, well, this is just like totally unfair. I mean, like, sure, the guy screwed up, but we're talking forever in fire, and we're talking about you won't even go warn his family so that they don't make the same mistake. Like, there's no love here. And I started judging God. So what was happening in my mind as I read that story was nothing but judgment. And that's the point that's about to be made. I was first judging the rich man for not helping Lazarus, and then I was judging God for not helping the rich man, right? And that's what happened.
And I was judging, why do they write stories like that when that isn't what God is all about?
That's right, judging. Why would, judging the people who put it in the Bible, right?
Christ, not God.
All right, so what I'm going to do now is go back to NTI, and we're going to look at what Holy Spirit does with this story. So starting at verses 19 to 31. The story of the rich man and Lazarus has no meaning as it is written. And yet, the story is filled with meaning and true purpose when one looks beyond its words with true perception. When you look at this parable through the eyes of the old law, you see two separate men. Although you are given very little information, you see a man in need of compassion and a man who did not give it. You may then decide that the man who did not give compassion deserved eternal lack of compassion, which he received from God. Or you may determine that in the end, God showed the greatest lack of compassion of all. It isn't important what judgments you make. They are all based on the old law of separateness. Now let me show you how this parable can be seen when viewed without the law. The parable is a collection of thoughts which are being tested within the mind for value. The thoughts are not separate from one another, for each thought has been planned in order to conduct the test thoroughly. There is the thought of more and the thought of less placed side by side as if they are separate. There is the thought of suffering and the thought of right and wrong are tossed in to maintain the illusion of separateness. The story plays itself out as a test. And as the story plays itself out, the scales of pleasure and suffering seem to tip. But all of this story is thought. As the story plays itself out, it seems to become more confusing and more complicated, and one forgets that the story is only thought within the mind, pure illusion without reality of any kind. As one makes judgments, the story becomes more meaningful. It seems to take on life, and the story continues and is reapplied as meaning when similar thoughts come together in the mind. And yet, the story was never anything but thought without power to affect apart from the mind of the thinker. So what does this story say to you? All perception is thought within the mind of the thinker. The thought has no meaning of itself, but it is given meaning by the thinker. If the thought seems to have effects, it is the thinker that gives that thought any effects it seems to have. In other words, there is no power outside of the power of the mind. So what is being said here is that that story doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. And, you know, as different people read it, they give it different meanings, right? I mean, you literally could have Christians, and I'm sure you do, have Christians that perceive that as a story of righteousness, a story of if you do not do good, you will burn in hell, and that's righteous. That's righteous judgment, right? And then you have people like us who are on a different spiritual path and who want to see God differently, who are instead mad at the people who put it in the Bible. You know, how can you know? And, you know, I mean, I know I've heard this in our spiritual circles a lot. People mad at the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church designed the Bible, right? And they had lots of books to choose from, and they threw out the Gnostics and maybe other books that were better. And they, you know, you hear these discussions without even noticing that, you know, again, all that's happening in our minds are judgments. We're giving meaning. And first of all, I don't think any of us were even there when the Bible was made, so how the heck do we know? You know, we talk like we know what we're talking about, you know, how they made these decisions, and they just wanted to control the people, and, you know, blah, 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 all the stuff that we say. So what this is saying is there is no meaning to that story. And in fact, if you've read A Course in Miracles, the first few lessons, you also know it says there's no meaning to any of your thoughts. There's no meaning at all to the world. There's no meaning anywhere. And the meaning that we give, we completely make up, which is why I could sit here and think this is a dingy room and why the heck do we have to meet here? And Dan could be sitting here thinking this is a wonderful sanctuary. What a great place to meet, right? Because we just make everything up. And then what he's saying is once we make something up and we believe it, we then reapply it in a similar circumstance. And every time we reapply it in a similar circumstance, it becomes stronger. And this is how beliefs get made. So again, if we believe that, let's say that we go with the thought that the rich man should have helped Lazarus. That's what we believe, right? And that Lazarus was not compassionate and he deserved punishment. Let's say that's the decision we made. Then pretty soon we see some news story where somebody's not helping someone and we judge that person. And then pretty soon we hear about some president of some charity who was actually skimming some money off the top for himself and not everything was going to the people that was supposed to be helped, and we judge that person. So we take these judgments that we make and we continue to reapply them. And we develop our own personal opinion, you could say, our own personal story about the world and how it is and how it's supposed to be. And when it's going the way we think it's supposed to be, we feel a sense of okayness. But when it's not going the way we think it's supposed to be with all of our judgments and beliefs, we don't feel okayness. And this is what duality is. And what this is telling us is duality is completely made up here. It's completely made up here, and we do it all the time. Some of it you could say is learned. Our parents, you know, kind of taught us, but we chose to believe them. And they chose to believe somebody else. Who, you know, it's all just made up stuff. I had a dream, and some of you know about this. I know Ruby knows about this. I had a dream about a week ago where my house was burglarized. And I caught the burglar in the kitchen. And for some reason, I wasn't angry. I wasn't afraid. There was nothing like that. It was almost, you know, nonchalant when I caught him. But there was something in me that knew I had to break his jaw. I had to. And my first thought was I would not be strong enough to break his jaw. But then the, you know, the intuition and the dream said, you are, you just need to let go of the idea that you're not strong enough and you can do it. And so with great determination, you know, actually like that, like in a very weird way, you know, I took his teeth and I pulled them apart and I broke his jaw. I did it. So then shortly after that, I woke up. And when I woke up, the only thing that hit me was that wasn't real. That wasn't, nothing happened. I mean, really, that was the thought. That was just a dream. That was nothing real. There was no burglar, right? Nobody's jaw got broken. I didn't do anything. I mean, nothing happened. Well, then I went into my 7 steps work after that, which actually ended up using the dream. And it was a very similar lesson. It was a similar lesson about how things are meaningless, but then we apply meaning. And so I made a post about this on Facebook. And on 2 different groups, even though I explained that I had the dream, and I woke up knowing the dream meant nothing, and then I went into the 7 steps, and here's what I learned, that everything means nothing, and we give it all the meaning and all that. People kept interpreting the dream. They just couldn't help themselves. Well, here's what it meant when you tried to break his jaw, and here's what it meant when he... And of course, they didn't have the same interpretation, you know? And so I was able to see it happening, you know? People, and then they really believed they knew something about me and my unconscious. They labeled me based on their interpretation of a dream. So again, we do it all the time. We interpret things, we make decisions about what we're looking at, we make decisions about what we're listening to, we believe ourselves even though we're making it up, and then we keep reapplying those meanings. And that's how we come up with our view of the world, and again, how things are supposed to be and how things are not supposed to be. And if, you know, it's wonderful living with people that I wasn't raised with. You know, like Danielle's not my first, she's my 4th. You know, I lived with Laurent for a while. I lived with this lady named Carolyn. I lived with this lady named Debbie. Now I live with Danielle. But one thing that's really fun about living with people that were raised in a completely different environment is that I can see how different our minds are, how we made completely different decisions about the exact same things. I've had lots of guests in my house, too. One thing that always amazes me is how many different ways you can do dishes. You know, and everybody believes they're doing it the right way. You know, so their way is the right way, and everybody else's way is the wrong way. And, you know, every now and then I've talked to Danielle a little bit. Now, why do you do that? You know, why do you do dishes that way? Because I do it this way. And she'll tell me, and I go, That's just another set of reasoning, but it's what makes sense in her mind based on the judgment she has and, you know, what's effective to her and what's not effective and what matters and what doesn't matter. And I just have a different mind with different decisions that I've made about what's effective and what's not effective and what matters and what doesn't matter. So we do dishes differently. And none of it's true. She made up all of her thoughts about the right and wrong way to do dishes. I made up all of my thoughts about the right and wrong way to do dishes. And if I believe them, then when you come to my house and try to help out, I might actually be pissed about the way you're doing it. Right? That happens. So, we're almost done. Let me go ahead and finish this, and then we'll do a quick silence, then we'll go into quiet. So starting with sentence 25. This is a fact that I would have you consider now. Remember all that I have been teaching as you consider the impact of what I am telling you now. Everything you experience through the filter of your mind. You are never focused on the world. You are always focused on thought. The basis of all your experience until now has been the belief in the law of separateness. The Spirit of God is one, and everything that exists exists within the Spirit of God. The truth is always true. And now, what does this story mean except that it can have no meaning? And if that is true of this story, can that which you experience have any meaning apart from the meaning that you give it? And again, if you wanted to test this scientifically, you could, because you could set up any kind of a circumstantial experiment, put a bunch of different people in, especially from different cultures, different age groups would be great, and then ask them to tell you what they saw, what that meant, what should have happened, what shouldn't have happened, right? You're not going to get the same thing. Because whatever your circumstantial event is that you set up for them to witness, they're all going to be looking at through the filter of their mind, through their beliefs, through their judgments. They're going to see different things. They're going to think different things should have happened. It's all made up. So I'll go ahead and stop the recorder, and we'll take a few minutes of silence while you guys contemplate this, and then we will talk about it.